So please welcome Russell Swanigan.
Thank you. This theme tonight really stumped me. I had no idea what to do with it. It seems simple, home sweet home, but it took me a very long time to figure this out. Because I went to 15 schools before I graduated from high school. And so at times it was very difficult to figure out where my home was. For example, at the end of my fifth grade year, I was told that, well, we were going to hit the road again. And I knew what that meant. It meant that we were going to hit the road again. And just because it was the first part of May, really didn't mean much. We were going to, this time, get in the car, and we were going to travel across the country from the West Coast to the East Coast and back to the West Coast, take as long as we wanted. And this time, we were going to camp. And when I heard that we were going to camp, my mind went right down the stairs of the basement to the shelf where this old, green, moldy army surplus tent was housed. I found it on the first day that we had moved into this house, and I was always looking for an excuse to, well, see what that was all about. So I hauled the thing upstairs and out into the backyard, and I unfolded it. It was stiff and thick and brittle with age, and the ropes were in a rat's nest of tangle, but the tent poles were there and the stakes were there, and I wrestled with it for a couple hours, and I finally got it to be stable and somewhat erect, and I stood back and I looked at that, and I thought about, well, the 3 or 4 months ahead of us, and I thought about how this was going to be my own private space for once, that was mine, that had its own walls and its own door and its own boundaries. A dream for any 11-year-old. I untied the flap, the door, and I stepped in, and I was overcome with this basement, moldy cat piss smell. It was beautiful. It was heady. It was repellent to women, which at 11 years old was my major interest, at least having to do with where my sister was concerned. And I thought about all the possibilities as this tent sort of fluffed and undulated in the breeze. And I thought, well, all the places I could go, all the dreams that I could have, all the imaginings that could be imagined right there in that tent. And it turned out that I didn't have to imagine very much. But to get me started, I got my sleeping bag out and I rolled it out inside that tent and put my hands behind my head and looked up at the ceiling of the tent that had those little pinpricks, you know, that let the sunlight through. It was kind of this constellation of stars in the middle of the day, and that just set my imagination rolling on, and I thought, home sweet home. This tent was a cradle of my imagination. It turned out I didn't have to imagine much because, for example, I didn't have to imagine in the first part of May being in Estes Park, Colorado, high in the Rockies and being hit by a late spring snowstorm and being so cold. It turned out it was the only night that I didn't spend, about 4 months we were gone, I did not spend in the tent there. I slept in the car instead because it was so very cold. And that was the night that the bear visited, ripped off the ties of the tent flap, made himself right at home, and made off with my 16-ounce family-sized bag of peanut M&Ms, left behind muddy paw prints, hair, and a musky sort of odor. And I didn't have to imagine just how beautiful and amazing those paint pots are, those mud pots in Yellowstone. I didn't have to imagine the prairies of Montana spotted with all those buffalo. And I didn't have to imagine golf ball-sized hail balls that come down in the upper Midwest. They're huge, and when they hit the tent, they sound like the big bass drum. And then sitting inside that tent, looking out at the flap at the Kansas sky with the clouds roiling and dipping and waiting on that tornado watch. And the Great Lakes, all that water with no salt. And what it was like to be on the tallest building in the world and look down on people that looked like ants below. These adventures, this tent and I shared together. We camped in Jersey City, New Jersey, in a vacant lot. Who could imagine this? In a vacant lot with other adventurous people. And there I met a man that lived in a semi-truck trailer with the chimpanzee. And I heard the voice of God deep within the most amazing and violent and frightening thunderstorm I'd ever encountered before or since in the Black Hills of South Dakota. These adventures we shared to the East Coast, the West Coast, and back to the Pacific Northwest, where we were camped in a campground just off the Puget Sound. And it was growing late in the summer. It was late August, and there was talk about the trip being over. And I sat in my tent, and I looked up through that fabric that had started out so thick and stiff and had now grown thin and washed by those constant New England summer storms and scrubbed by those hail balls and baked in the sun of the prairies. And the fabric of that tent has grown thin and sort of gossamer. And as I soon discovered, it had grown about as thin as our money. And there was talk about not, the spirit of the talk had changed from, well, where do we go next, to what do we do now? From, do we buy groceries or gas? Do we repair the car, or do we save our money to put down on a rental house? I thought about that. We were not traveling anymore. We were stuck. There's a difference. And there was talk about how long the campground was going to let us stay there. I don't know what happened. I don't know, but there was some error in the calculations that set us in this place in the Northwest with the days growing somewhat shorter, but not quite. School almost starting, and we not being able to register for school because we didn't have an address. And I started to feel a shift from adventure to adversity. It's one thing to live in a tent in a campground by choice. It's quite another to live in a tent outside in the elements by imposition, which is the situation that we were faced with. And I began to feel that fear, and I looked out from that tent amongst all of the gear that we traveled with, and it started to look weak and shabby and not up to the task. We got up early one morning in the dark and drove for quite a while, really, and ended up at a blackberry farm that was having a late harvest, and I was told to pick as many as I could, but don't eat any because we're paid by the box. And all of us picked all day until our hands were black and scratched. And we came back the next day and the day after that. And at the end of the week, our hands were black, purple, stained, seemed permanently. And we had scratches and scarred, but we had the first month's rent on a house. We returned to the campground and I packed up that tent, and I actually don't know what happened to it. But we arrived at this little house, this little white clapboard house that was in bad need of paint and repair, and it was on the edge of Highway 99 that rumbles through Linwood, Washington, and the stink of diesel fuel and the sound of those semis replaced that harmony that you hear in nature. And I went into the house with my sleeping bag. It was at night, and it was cold because the heat hadn't been turned on, and I was shown the room that I would be staying in, and I unrolled my sleeping bag among these walls that were not thin, and they were sturdy. And I unrolled the sleeping bag on the floor, which was hard, but at least there were no rocks and sticks under it. And there was a leak in the roof, but that's all right. The leak wasn't where I slept. And I slid down into my sleeping bag, and I put my hands behind my head, and I looked at the ceiling above, and I thought, oh, home sweet home.